This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
You are clearly Team Pascal then? Or are you Team Hayne and just...
Oh, you can't bet against Alex.
Okay, thank you.
I got in trouble for it.
My heart says Pascal, but my head says Alex.
My wallet says Alex, yeah, I understand.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
And of course, they rag on me for not talking enough.
Nice.
Listen to me now, bitch.
That's true.
Jay Boosh.
You know what? This is how it works. I'm not old as fuck, and I don't play idiot. And those are the two things that apparently matter when you want to play Mindflayer.
Scotty.
And I cashed that GP. Like, that's legit. Like, for me, being just the fucking dad grinder, that's a huge deal.
And Jeremy.
Sometimes you just have to be that guy. We're like, oh, you want to play some modern? It's like, yeah, I want to play some modern. And it's like, I'll suspend a Lotus Bloom. And they're just like, oh, why did I want to play modern with you?
And now, the A-Team.
Hello out there in wonderful podcast land. Welcome to the A-Team 238. This is the scummiest Mr. Scumbag Schofield. Someone's trying to beat down the doors to get at me with this delicious podcast goodness. They're here to get at the sexy man from the East, Montreal King, Mr. Pro Tour, Mr. KYT. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing really well. I'm not in Montreal right now, but I'm doing really well.
Oh, yeah. You're already traveling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful. Getting that sweet testing on?
Yeah, trying to. At Castle Danlantier.
Castle Danlantier. Ooh, that sounds fancy.
Chateau de l'Enfant.
So does this put you closer to the also super sweet man of the people, Mr. Scotty Mac?
Sort of, but not as close as I would want. So,
well, Scotty, what do you have to say about that?
He's about one-third of the way there.
One-third of the way
he's
there.
He's one-third of the way on the way here, yeah.
So we can't even, like riff on a popular, like, rock song?
No.
Not even halfway there?
No.
Not even Living on a Prayer?
No.
Well, maybe.
No.
It is Pro Tour testing.
Yeah, no, KYT is in Ottawa, for those of you that are familiar with Canadian geography, and for those that aren't, get an atlas. Oh.
Oh.
Hey.
And that last voice you heard was our motherfucking King of the North. Mr. J. Boosh.
The King of the North!
Wow, you shits.
The King of the North!
Wow, you shits. I love it.
It's still a great line.
It's so good, too, because like, I discovered, like, some fucking random CCG game, and it says whenever, like, instead of tap, it's the exact same mechanic, but it's just called bow.
Oh,
and
that's like, L5R, right?
Yeah. So I'm just like, yeah, all these shits, like, bow all your shits, they all bow to me.
Nice. Well, we had a bunch of stuff happening this weekend. It was, of course, the first legal tournament weekend for Magic Origins in the standard environment. So there was a lot of eyes on Chicago this weekend as Star City Games rolled into town to host their 20K Standard Open. It was interesting. There was, to the surprise of not many people, Abzan was sort of the most played deck still. It's, you know, sort of the deck that didn't lose anything and kind of gains, you know, some universal catch-alls, and it's just still generically good. There was a huge surge in Green Red Devotion, which was interesting to see, but I think that that was due to Brad Nelson's article where he basically called Red-Green Devotion sort of, or Green Red Devotion sort of the fun police. Because it's just like, it's so streamlined and rampy, you just like go over the top of all of your cute little shit that you've, you know, oh, it's opening week, I'll play a brew. No, you get smashed by devotion. So that's interesting. And in fact, there were like three of the four top four were all Green Red Devotion at the end of the event. But there's a couple sweet decks that came out of that. One, of course, being a Turbo Fog deck. One being a five-color Rally the Ancestors deck, which went off, and seeing that on camera was pretty cool. But yeah, overall, I mean, KYT has been playing a lot of Standard in preparation for the Pro Tour. I'm sure your eyes were heavily on this. What did you see coming out of that event?
I think I came down on the Saturday, so I just arrived at Dan's place, and at Saturday we spent most of the time like freaking out. At least Dan, I don't know how Sarcassi was freaking out at the Rally the Ancestors deck, but then always following it up with, I don't think it's a very good deck.
Yeah, I know that deck kind of existed before, and it's always been like...
Well, I think the problem with the Rally decks before is that you had to get a Rally for 5 in order for it to basically be lethal, right? Because it involves some number of Siege Rhinos and Grey Merchants and Mogus Marauders. No, but now...
The Mogus Marauder version was like the one that I always saw.
Sure. But like even then, it's still playing like an Abzan deck mostly, right? And that was the problem. Whereas now you've got it lean and mean, more of a sort of a green-black-blue shell, I guess. Jace does a lot of work in terms of being able to kind of like mill out, mill a bunch of cards off the top of your own graveyard or off the top of your own library. But on top of that, I think the fact that you can basically rally for 3 and kill your opponent is pretty sick.
Yeah. Jera, what did the old Marauder version run?
It was just like a bunch of like dorky 2-drops. Like that's
played Nyx Weaver to like grind. So, like it was really dirtily and grindy, right? And it was playing Nyx Weavers. It was playing some of them played that Torment, the 3/3 flyer guy.
Torment.
Yeah, but it was like I said, primarily it was just sort of like an Abzan dirtle value deck. Like they were playing Siege Rhinos, they were playing Grey Merchants, and like that's what they were trying to do.
That's not the one I saw. The one that I saw was like more like a just a whole bunch of just stupid 2-drops.
Okay, then bring it back.
And just doing like the Uber attack. Now having the husk like makes the deck like way huge. Scary for sure. But it was that makes it a lot more entertaining.
It got me really excited to see the husk because it allows you to like go off following turn or if you whiff or don't have enough damage for whatever reason. So that was really impressive to me. I looked at it, I was like, wow. And because there's no like rest in peace, there's no like really, can't really think of like something that would directly attack the graveyard. So while watching it, I got like super excited, especially since I've been testing Jace in a different number of decks, and this one it's like there's a specific card you want to snapcaster back, and that's being able to snapcaster Rally a lot of the time, and you're always going to activate, almost always, because of, between Seder Wayfinders and a lot of these mill cards, you're going to activate Jace right away, and then you can just go bring Marauder, get even your mana dorks, have haste, being able to snapcaster the Rally. So that was really impressive to watch, and just seeing like his opponents have like the slowish fair mid-range decks not being able to deal with that, it was kind of funny.
Yeah, I posted a link in our chat here there from like Frank Lepore. Had like this deck was out sort of like April 2nd. There was some guy that 4-0'd a Bodo Daily with it. And I mean, that's got your list with all of your Mogus' Marauders and that sort of stuff in it. And then also there's a guy, Jamal Sims, that played Abzan Rally at a Star City event in May, and he was like 4 Grey Merchant, 4 Grim Harrowspec, 4 Merciless Executioner, 4 Siege Rhino, 4 Nyx Weaver, 3 Sidisi Undead Weaver. Like, you know, and he was very much just kind of going almost like a mono black devotion value plan. So it kind of, you're definitely right, there were definitely 2 versions of the deck, I think, that were primarily out there.
Yeah, like the value plan, I understand, like that one, the value plan actually really reminded me, oddly, of like Seance.
Sure.
Well, like this guy didn't end up doing well on day 2, so it looks like it's not as consistent as it looked in the games that were featured. I ended up playing against it online against some of my friends, and I was able to beat it with some random decks of mine, so it's not as crazy. And I think the guy's list is pretty much well tweaked. I don't see like how I can improve it that much looking at the 60 that he has. Like, you have every single maybe like playing against Jay Lansdowne, he said he thought the Liliana and the Deafness Raptors were probably the least impressive cards in his 60, so maybe there's some tweaking. Actually, maybe there is some tweaking to be done with that deck.
Yeah, Patrick and Cedric both kind of seemed like the concept of the deck was really close, and the concept was really, really good, but that it just seems like there were definitely some potentials for optimization.
Yeah, there's just no like rest in peace card or whatever, but you know, your Jeff Hoogland was able to play like artifacts, and that just shuts down the whole intimidate aspect of Husk completely. Yeah. So he's like, I'm just watching that feature match, and it's like, he just can't win. Like, he can't attack and do an army of doctors or the hanger back guy that will make a zillion artifact guys too. So that was kind of hilarious that there was no way, no zero chance that it was going to win. On top of that, Hoogland obviously has a number of counter spells being blue white. So that's like a nightmare matchup for that deck.
Yeah. How did you feel about his deck overall?
I thought it was interesting. Like, very interesting. Having it be like a pseudo bitter blossom with upside, like Biting of Thassa upside. And I am interested if it's playing enough good artifacts for it to be consistent. I haven't tried. That's one of the decks that I haven't tried yet, but it's something I'm really extremely curious about. Whether it's good enough, better than just casting Siege Rhinos, I'm not convinced yet.
Okay. So the heroic deck seemed to do pretty well.
Yeah.
Logan, of course, carved through all of the devotion except for the finals. I think he basically bricked on some cards or whatever, but seemed like it was definitely a good pick for that weekend as well. What card really impressed me, actually, I was looking at Jeskai Tokens that Kevin McCleskey played. And it playing Jace in Jeskai Tokens is pretty insane.
Yeah. It becomes another must-answer threat that, fuels your treasure cruises, and it acts like a sort of ascendancy when you don't have it, so that you can mill to those key cards. So it's a deck that we're testing right now, and it's just really hard to play and really hard to play against. Like, my mind is just like really tired after like even one game of playing either side of Jeskai Ascendancy.
I feel like it's one of those where if you've got Jeskai Ascendancy in play, it all of a sudden becomes like really, like, if you've got a token or two on the table and any cards in hand and an Ascendancy on the table, you're probably in a really good shape.
Yeah, and it's one of those decks that, again, Jace is at its best because it can almost insta-flip the moment it loots. And then you can buy back a Stoke, you can buy back a Treasure Cruise, and it has happened in testing a lot, and it's really crazy. You feel really dirty.
Yeah. I feel like Jace, people are talking about Nissa being the new hotness, you know, and she's sort of that crazy new Planeswalker where, you know, and she's seeing play in Abzan, she's seeing play in Devotion Shells, she's seeing play everywhere because, you know, plays really well with Dem Protector, you know, because you can just buy her back later. Like, you can just play her for value to gain a land, and then you Den Protector her back and play her, and she's a fucking 3-mana Planeswalker that, you know, makes 4/4s and then draws you cards with Courser sort of scenario. So it's interesting in that regard, I think, but I think Jace really impressed me every time I saw him on camera. I think he was just that good.
Yeah, I was also really impressed by it. I was also impressed by Nissa, but specifically in the Abzan decks, I'm not even convinced it's good in the Devotion decks I've been playing, because a lot of the fear is when it flips, its +1 ability is basically draw a card. And in the Devotion deck, you basically have a lot of cards that are pretty dead late in the game when you're drawing like these mana dorks. Yeah. Whereas Abzan, obviously, a lot of your cards, most of your deck is just high impact value cards. So it's at its scariest in that particular shell. In other shells, this is just not that crazy, not that impressive to me.
Sure. Makes sense. Another card that stood out that I didn't expect to see a lot of play was seeing a lot more play than I thought was Sphinx's Tutelage.
Yes. Turbo fuck.
So not only that, I mean, McCleskey played three copies in his sideboard.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Yeah.
Right. Whenever he draws a card, target opponent puts the top two cards of the library into his or her graveyard. If they're both non-land cards that share a color, repeat the process. So, like, he's looting like crazy with Ascendancy and just, like, milling out his opponent pretty quickly. And especially in a field full of, you know, if you're expecting a field full of Devotion or Abzan, where all the multicolored cards are just splashing over and carrying into green or black, like, it's pretty scary. So, you know, and that, of course, there's a deck that came out that was, it was a Turbo Fog deck that came out of that, too, that people were pretty excited about.
Yeah, it looked insane. I'm surprised he lost that match against Steve Rubin. So
I think he sideboarded improperly and ultimately cost him the match, right?
It just seems like so miserable. Like, Rubin has to play, like, saw the coverage, the commentator saw I had to bring Arishin clerics just to get rid of the total dead creature removal that he probably had. So
gotta get in there.
And it seemed too slow, and like, yeah, you're right. Like, even Cedric and Patrick were confused as to why he had, like, Prolic Ancient or whatever, why didn't he just, like, stick to just fogging the opponent out and winning that way? And it looked like it's a nightmare matchup, and it's a nightmare matchup for, I tested it against, it's just a buy when you're playing against Red-Green Devotion game one, because too slow, and I'm just playing these Atarkas that do nothing against Turbo Fog, so.
Yeah.
See, that really reminds me of, like RTR and stuff like that, when we decided to play Eggs, and that's the one that Eggs ultimately won. It was just because playing against Jund, like, you were, it was just a game one buy.
Yeah.
I had no way to interact with you. You were playing a completely non-interactive deck, and you were just always going to win game one. And yes. If red-green is going to be, like, that deck, like, that seems like a really strong place to be starting, you know? Just make a sideboard that actually does something. Don't play Pearl Lake Ancient.
Yeah, and game one's going to be really consistent in that matchup because you just have Monastery Siege and Dictate, so you're just going to dig to all those stupid fucking fogs and Aether Spouts or whatever, and then just win. There's just no way Red-Green's able to clock enough, so you're going to win 1-0 a lot, like, unless you mull to 4 or whatever, a huge percentage of the time. And then games 2 and 3 comes to the Red-Green Devotion sideboard, so they... I'm not even sure if Reclamation Sage is enough for that matchup, if the Fog Blitter draws right, like, maybe you actually do need something as strong as Back to Nature to be able to negate that stuff and stop some of the random decks that might come up, like those crazy enchantment decks that are coming up. So maybe Back to Nature has to be in the sideboard just to avoid auto losing to this Dirtle deck.
Well, yeah, and it was just, like, it was so funny to see, like, the counterintuitive Days Undoing. But, like, the card was like, oh, you know what? I've actually backed myself into a corner. Well, let's just reset. Because I'm still going to win if I have all these cards.
Yeah, I'm pissed that I didn't realize how good that card's going to be, because it's shooting up like crazy. And I think it was at $5 at one point. And yeah. I got a foil at the Midnight pre-release, was super happy because it was $50. And now it's even playable in Standard. Like, what the fuck? So I was really... I think that deck has potential. Like, it just shuts down all these decks. And like, Steve Rubin, for example, didn't have enough sideboard cards for that matchup. I mean, it looked like he wasn't... Like, has to rely on drawing your Siege Rhinos to get that those last points of damage, right? So it looked miserable, but he got there.
Yeah, so there was a lot of really exciting stuff, a lot of good magic that was played, obviously. But you've been doing your testing. What's standing out?
Our team, because our team is more slow. Last I talked about on the episode, I think I said it was Dan, Pascal, myself. Now we're working. I don't know if I mentioned we're working and talking with Lucas a lot. So, and he's been famous for Abzan. He won GP Toronto with Abzan. And Dan likes to call him the Abzan doctor. So, and every match we play is just, it's still really strong. And it, like you said earlier, it just plays some of the best cards in the format. Elspeth is still insane. And nothing has changed in how effective that deck is, and now it gains some number of Nissas. Like the deck isn't going to change that much, but it's still a debate as to whether you want to go a Seder Wayfinder route. You want to go, maybe you want to play Elvish Visionary. Maybe you don't want to play two drops. Maybe you go back to Sylvan Caryatids. So the two drop is up for a lot of debate. And I personally still like Regular Devotion a lot. I mean, I played it in Providence, and it's still a deck that has a good matchup against the Abzan decks. And I've been really impressed in my limited testing of Nissa's Pilgrimage, because the problem with Red Green Devotion, and Pilgrimage hasn't been adopted in the SCG list, but the problem
that's
is post sideboard.
That's not true. Chris Anderson played three copies in his 75, sir.
Ooh, okay. It hasn't been adopted by at least some of the bigger names that I've seen, and
Granderson came in fourth. What are we talking about here?
Like, I mean, pro name. Like, I don't think Brad was playing them. So
what about like
Nam Sung Wook? I don't think he was playing Red Green Devotion.
I can never remember that guy's name.
I'm exaggerating. Granderson had one on his sideboard, but he was tweeting about it all weekend, saying it was insane.
Because the weakness I complain all the time is post sideboard. They have Drown Sorrows, Languish, or whatever that just mass removals your little guys. And that's a huge weakness. Then you no longer can hit six or seven mana as efficiently. And this sort of counters that, makes your deck a lot more consistent at the expense of more explosive draws, because some people cut Radical Mystic. Some people cut some number of other cards to be able to fit Pilgrimage. So it's a matter of, do you want that super early start, or do you want to be able to mitigate like how much you get owned post-sideboard against people who are prepared for your little mana guy. So I've been liking it. It seems pretty sweet. And I think that deck is still really good. I mean, it won Providence. It's still one of the best decks in the format. It can't beat Turbo Fog, obviously, in game one. But
So I think you need to be playing like a non-zero number of Back to Natures at this point, right? I mean, if Heroic is going to be a thing, and you need to be able to beat cards like Outpost Siege, and you're going to need to be able to, you know, take care of all these stupid enchantments out of the Turbo Fog deck, then Back to Nature is just the simple answer.
It's just backbreaking. Now, with that said, it's tough to judge, like, what, like, Dan's telling me, like, who's actually going to play these decks at the Pro Tour, right? That is true. Like, I would imagine huge Abzan numbers, that's for sure. And so, am I going to really see Turbo Fog? Maybe, but like Back to Nature is not like a bad card by any stretch against a good number of those funky decks that are out there. And still tweaking around with Jeskai. Lost a lot of faith in Abzan aggro, just because Languish is in the format now.
Yeah, it's really good against that deck.
Yeah, it makes it like before you couldn't really interact well with like Fleece Mainlines or Rakshasa Death
Dealers.
There
was like this terrible awkward span where, you know, you can either play these 5-mana sweepers or you can play Drown in Sorrow. And it's like, depending on the draw that each deck got, it either lined up really well or lined up really terrible. And it was basically like playing Russian roulette, like with a 50-50 shot, right? So,
right.
So Languish is really nice because it kind of gives you that guaranteed catch-all cleanup. And so that's sweet.
And they have to keep a lot of mana for a Death Dealer to be alive, you guys pump it back to six, which is like rarely the case.
Yeah.
You get rid of Anafenza. You make Windmake Rock a really poor card now.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. So that deck really needs to adapt somehow. I'm not really sure if it can. It just seems Languish just seems and it is played. I mean, the number one guy after Swiss, I think it was Bruce or Brad Edelman. He had like three languages in his
Bruce place. Edelman,
yeah,
three language in the main deck.
Yeah, so it's a legitimate card that's being played a lot, and I know it spells looks bad for Abzan aggro. Funny, like we've seen like spreads of mono red and mono red goblins. Not sure. Like, most people don't want to run into Caryatid plus Corsair decks with this, and I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, green-red, I feel really good with green-red, being able to go higher really fast, and then just side in Nylea's Disciples from the sideboard to have a really good matchup. So, mono-red, we haven't touched at all. And it doesn't seem like a deck that anybody on the team wants to be caught dead playing or something.
Yeah. What do you mean you don't want to play mono red in a format with Courser of Gruffix and Languish? What do we in Drowned in Sorrow, I mean, and Ocean Cleric? What do you mean?
It's interesting Chapin called like the new red guy, like the 2/1 that has the Chandra effect with prowess. Like he ranked it as the number one constructed card for Magic Origins. So he was really pumped about it. And it looks good. I mean, Dan's bought like infinite copies of it.
Really?
And he's influenced like other people to buy infinite copies. So I don't know. We haven't actually tested this card once yet, so it's hard to say if that investment is worth the money invested. So, but yeah, there's still a lot of time, and then there's still more SCG results and other stuff. There's the MDSS even here in Ottawa next weekend, so lots of things to try still. But as for drafting, I'm pretty comfortable. And I'm going to get a lot of MTGO drafts in before the Pro Tour, so I'll be super comfortable for limited. And it really looks like ultimately, for now, like constructed is basically like the same decks with a few tweaks here and there. So, like, Abzan's still good, and we'll see.
Cool. Nice. Well, I'm glad to hear that Pro Tour prep is running well.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy.
So how does it feel to be part of a team instead of just, you know, being on your own?
Yeah, I mean, before it was hard. I mean, it was hard to coordinate testing with Jessica and Xavier. Jessica did come in. We got a few drafts in. We just didn't do as much with Constructed as we wanted to, I think. But now that we've got more experienced people, I mean, it's kind of crazy with Lucas just spewing different versions of Abzan in our Facebook group, and Pascal giving his thoughts on he's like the brewmaster of our team on all the different tweaks, all the different decks that he wants to try and make. It's been interesting, and me and Dan just staying true and just testing like what we feel is the best right now.
Nice.
So it's been good. It's been good. And the drafts, like, I have to say, the depth in Ottawa of good players is definitely deeper than in Montreal, despite Montreal being the... we've talked about this. It's like, it's almost like Haynes Stern probably put me as the third best player in Montreal. So it's like, the depth is not running that deep.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
What happened? I thought that place was like a haven for good Magic players.
I think what happened is like those two elite players are just Pro Tour players, so they don't play at the local store anymore. So there's no good players to just breed more good players. And I sort of just stopped playing altogether as well. So we're getting like Xavier is playing a lot at his local shop, and he's getting better playing against and making others better. But I think that's what's missing compared to like these other places where the good players still play at, you know, you got people like Phil Sams playing like every event every day or something.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Despite the fact that he pisses and moans about it endlessly.
And the fact that like he loves Modern. So.
He's there, isn't he?
Yeah. So with him, like,
don't answer.
I heard him in the background. I know he's there.
No, he's not. Oh. But it's a joke that he just complains a lot about Modern. Yeah. But I think it's really important, like having they don't have to be elite players, but having good players just playing there often and playing against them. I think that's what really helped me at my store Check Swing. I was considered one of the best, but like I wasn't significantly better than anyone, and I was still having good competitive Magic because I still had people punishing me for mistakes that I made. So that's why, like, I'm probably third or like at worst fourth. So, and I'll be honest, it's not that deep compared to Ottawa. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Montreal. Step your game up.
If you're going to listen to this and be like, fuck you.
Fuck you. You're not going to win another match of Magic forever. That's funny.
All right. So I'm just going to pass it to Dan for a few moments.
Are
so you got
dropping this thing?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I'll take over.
All right.
Good evening, ladies.
Hey, Dan, how's it going, buddy?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, we are glad that you are hosting our fearless leader over there.
I didn't even invite him. He just sort of made his way over.
Just like,
yeah, that happens with him. You gotta.
Yeah, he was just. I got a message one morning, and he was just like, "Hey, I'm coming over for the week." And I was a little blindsided by it, so I had to take some time off work and cook him food and buy him groceries and stuff, and it's pleasant, but it took me by surprise.
So he tells us that you guys are knee deep in your standard testing, and
ankle deep. Yeah.
Okay. Fair.
Important
fair.
Distinction.
Fair. So he's given us sort of his two cents on where he sees the standard format headed.
And we wanted to hear from somebody competent instead.
Basically, is what this comes down to.
Well, you've got the wrong guy. But anyways, question away.
So, well, I mean, he very clearly kind of, Star City showed us a bunch of results this weekend.
Yep.
You know, Abzan being the number one play deck, Green Red Devotion coming out in droves to try to, you know, combat that. You know, if that's sort of the rock in the paper, what do you feel the scissor stack is of the format?
It's tough to say because I don't think anything truly has a leg up on the Abzan shell. I was surprised to see a lack of control over the weekend. I'm not really sure what to attribute that to other than maybe sort of Languish putting a lot of pressure on Ojutai and perhaps Gaea's Revenge from the red-green decks putting some pressure on the shell as well. I don't know. We've had some reasonable success with Jeskai decks looking a little bit more promising, with a couple new additions, and I don't know. It's tough to say what scissors really is. I mean, maybe we're going back to aggro. I guess you know, more testing will open that up a little bit. But Abzan and Red Green look like the runaway favorites at this time.
Yeah. So when you say Jeskai, are you looking at the tokens build, or are you looking more of sort of like the aggro build? Like, I know you know, Kevin McCluskey was playing. He topped aided the event with a Jeskai tokens deck with Jace in it, which looked really nice on camera. But I know that like Jerry and a couple other people were playing more of a traditional Jeskai aggro build. Have you been trying both out? Do you find one more prominent than the other?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. I mean, obviously the tokens deck had the more visible success over the weekend. But it's not clear to me, and it's not clear to anyone really, like where the pieces will end up in future weekends, I think. Mm. Both of the decks suffer from being a little bit disjointed. All of the cards, they don't work well together as much as they're just powerful cards that just sort of, you need to draw them in the right order for the specific matchup where you're facing. So it's difficult to say sort of like where the strengths lie in the Jeskai builds. We're playing a bunch of games with tokens right now. Against Abzan, and it's very hit or miss. Obviously, you know, the results are telling you that, you know, the deck is being very successful when it has its namesake card in play.
Yeah.
The Ascendancy. But you know, other than that, it's tough to say you know, how strong it truly is. And that's the issue that Jeskai has had all along, right? It just doesn't have the consistency that the other decks have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Jace has been promising, though. I got it. Like, I'm surprised at how effective the Planeswalkers have been from this set so far. They were tough to evaluate out of the gates, but they're looking pretty promising at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Nissa obviously put in some work in most of the Abzan shells. I think
yeah.
Every deck that showed up on camera with Jace in it was super impressive because they were sort of designed to abuse one or more of his abilities.
Yeah.
Are there any others you guys have been looking at, like Liliana, Chandra, or Gideon?
I'm not sure that Gideon or Chandra have what it takes to impact standard. Gideon's fault sort of lies in just how, you know, decks that incorporate him try to attack the format, right? Like, there's too many cards like Courser and Carry to just sort of brick wall the rest of the White Weenie decks.
Mm-hmm.
I think at this time for something like that to really show up, and I'm not even convinced that Gideon's Planeswalker form is good enough or does exactly what that deck wants it to do. And Chandra sort of has the drawback of being a 3-drop red creature in a format where there's already a pillar in Goblin Rabble Master, and it's not even clear that, you know, her strengths really translate to sort of a creature beatdown deck. It looks like she needs sort of the red burn heavy removal package just to sort of like abuse her ability and sort of take over.
Yeah, and even then, is her Planeswalker form good enough? Like, the one thing I noticed about her is her Planeswalker form is the closest to a previous version that we've had, right? Like I think that as far as all of the Planeswalkers individually side by side, I think her and Jace probably have, you know, sort of like the best power levels. But I mean, the same. I mean, like
power levels, like just based on like how good the Planeswalker form is.
Yeah, I mean, you flip over Chandra and she becomes what, like a four or whatever, and then you can plus one or plus two, and you're like
you can deal two damage to a player or two damage to a creature. I think it's very powerful. I had the great fortune of having it in one of my pre-release pools, and it was very good there. I'll tell you that. But I'm not convinced that it's where you want. Like, imagine how a Chandra Planeswalker lines up against a Siege Rhino or something like that, and it starts to look a little bit laughable. The Nissa's Planeswalker form to me looks like the strongest. Just individually, she doesn't really need anything to sort of help her out. She's just a card draw engine and also provides a 4/4 body to help protect her.
Yeah.
And I've been liking Jace too, just because it gives you a utility out of your graveyard, sort of protecting himself ever like just a little bit.
The snap ability in standard is pretty sweet.
It's very strong. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that it comes on a 2-mana body and flips so quickly is just very strong.
Yep. Yep. I agree.
Just nice. Sort of a question mark where he sort of lines up in the format and what decks he goes in, because he's not something that you can just throw in every deck with blue symbols.
Yeah. Yeah, you really want to be looking to leverage the graveyard, not only in, like, being able to get the most out of the looting ability, but also, you know, like, you want to be drawing the cards, but you also want to be using the cards that you're putting in the graveyard for something productive.
Yeah, for sure. And the cards that are looking the most abusable are cards like Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise for obvious reasons. Yeah. They're just extremely efficient. And, I mean, when your graveyard's already stock full, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know.
Flip J, Snapcast this Treasure Cruise for 1 mana, carry on, yeah. Yeah,
it's very powerful. And that's one of the strengths of the Ascendancy deck. I think, yeah, one of its problems before was just having its Treasure Cruise, having access to its Treasure Cruise and having access to the Ascendancy. And Jace is sort of cards 9 through 12 in that deck of that just provide you know, card advantage and give you your engine.
Sweet.
So it's interesting. It's interesting to see, you know, where that deck is going to go and if it has the tools finally to sort of establish itself.
Yeah. So one of KYT's downfalls the last time that he was at the Pro Tour, of course, was he worked really, really hard on his constructed deck, and Mr. Limited PTQ winner shit the bed in the limited format. So what are you guys doing to try to help him not fail in that aspect this time?
Well, I think you're talking to the wrong guy. I've never been known for my limited prowess.
So what do you do to help yourself?
First thing we did when he got here was we did a couple drafts, and we're going to be doing another probably one or two tomorrow. It's nothing nothing too intensive, and maybe that's probably one of my biggest faults is I don't particularly enjoy limited as much as most other people, so I don't spend too much time on it. But I am taking a lot of time to at least probably get in, you know, 10, 12 drafts sometime in the next week and a half, and hopefully, you know, put together a lot of pick order lists and have a good conversations on, you know, specific archetypes that exist in the draft format, and, you know, what those deck lists might look like and what we could be looking to draft at the Pro Tour itself.
Nice. Some of the early feedback that we've been getting out there in the interwebs is that the two drops are, like, supremely important in this limited format. And
there aren't very many of them, it seems. That was one thing that really stuck out in those couple drafts that we did initially, was just that every deck was just so hungry for two drops, and they just weren't there to collect.
Yeah. And, like, Leaf Gilder may just be the most powerful two drop in the format.
Is that the elf?
Yeah. Yeah, two drop that makes mana. Yeah.
Yeah, he's really strong. Really, really strong.
So... Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope you guys do well. Do you play a lot of MTGO, by the way, Dan?
I've played probably 3 or 4 matches lifetime on MTGO.
All right. So you are a paper guy through and through.
Yeah, no, I think I probably would be a lot better off having played MTGO my entire career, but it's not that I have no interest, I just don't make time for it, and
sure.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, KYT speaks really highly of the depth of the quality of players that exist out there in the Ottawa area, so, you know, I guess it can't be that hard to, you know, go to the store and play some games or, you know, have some people over and get quality Magic play experience.
Yeah, I mean, it's a reasonably competitive environment, and I think it's no surprise that it's sort of gotten that way because of the, you know, decent level quality of players that have played at the stores just so consistently over the years. And so you know, you can show up at a local store basically any night of the week and expect there to be, you know, 16 to 20 people that you'll have a good 4 or 5 round event and be able to get some good games in and against good people and get good conversation and all that. So yeah, I mean, it's pretty good for paper Magic. I don't really have any complaints. It's been good over the years.
That's something that you're really fortunate to have. I hope you realize, like, there is, I mean, Toronto is well known obviously for having an insane volume of Magic players, right? Like, I mean, there are a lot of fucking people that play cards out here. And there are a lot of different stores for people to play cards at.
And that's the problem, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's so spread out and there's so many stores.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's often difficult to find, you know, like any sort of dense collection. I mean, you're looking at the Face-to-Face Games Toronto store is starting to really collect, you know, a high volume of quality players. But, you know, like before that one came out, there were just, you had to go all over the place.
Yeah, no, I definitely. And that's just a product of how large the city is, right? I think Ottawa's in a good spot in that it's a big city, but it's not so big that everything is all spread out and there's not too much of a market.
Yeah.
I guess so. Certain stores have the monopoly and have had a monopoly for so long that it's provided these large, you know, card playing communities that do play at the stores and give players access to good Magic and a good environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's been good.
Awesome. Well, I wish you guys the best of luck in your testing. I can't wait to hear from KYT next week about what's changed. Are you guys staying there for the bulk of the time, or are you guys traveling and doing, like, I mean, I know you guys are working sort of remotely with, you know, like Lucas and Pascal and that sort of stuff. Are you guys all going to get together sort of before the Pro Tour, or like, what's the plan there?
We're going to do what we can. I mean, the whole schedule has been so messed up from the beginning because of all the different schedules that we're trying to accommodate, whether it be KYT's work schedule or my work schedule. I mean,
sorry, I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it.
I mean, okay. Jokes aside, I had to work today and I had to work, I have to work tomorrow and I couldn't take those off. So we had to do some, probably testing here. Otherwise I would have had to leave. And Pascal's got the GP coming up next weekend. So was not going to be available to play at all. So we're just kind of going back and forth and seeing what we can do and find time here and time there and see, you know, how much we can get.
Yeah. That event is Origins Limited though, right? Dallas?
It is. Yeah. So that'll be good for, just for seeing how the professional community sort of tackles it.
Cool.
It'd be sort of a good, introduction to the weekend, the weekend later.
Yeah,
that's not good English, but no, it'll be a good intro for Vancouver, I think, being able to see how people tackle the limited format.
Yeah, it's good.
But yeah, no, that's Pascal's in the GP race, so he has to go take off and fight for his right for Worlds.
You are GP of the year. You are clearly Team Pascal then, or are you Team Hayne? And just,
oh, you can't bet against Alex.
Okay. Thank you.
I got in trouble for it.
My heart says Pascal, but my head says Alex.
My wallet says Alex. Yeah, I understand. Yeah, all right. That's fair. So I'll ask you, since you are well known for your modern prowess, there is an MDSS this weekend. There are also multiple pre-TQs happening around yours and my area, in addition to the ones that happened last weekend in Belleville. Are you still super high on your blue-red twin because it's your deck, or do you legitimately feel like it's the best deck, or is there something else that you would play if given an unlimited card pool and unlimited knowledge of the format?
I think there's been a new deck that popped up recently. It was the Nourishing Shoal Gristlebrand deck. Mm-hmm. And I haven't played a game with or against it. I've seen it play a couple times, and I suspect that it's very good. But I don't know that it's any better than Blue Red Twin. I still think the Blue Red Twin is probably the best deck in the format. And I think that it goes through phases where people pick up green or pick up black or pick up white and just sort of splash it in Twin because it's the flavor of the month. But I think through and through, Blue Red Twin is probably just the best deck in the format. It gives you the most option to play through. It's consistent. It's two colors, so it's not too painful with the mana base, which is key for a deck like that. And yeah, no, I wouldn't recommend anything different. I haven't recommended anything different for weeks, months.
Yep.
Like I said, I haven't paid attention to these new combo decks that have spread it up. I suspect they're good, but I don't think that I can confidently suggest anything different.
Okay. Are you a main deck or sideboard Blood Moon guy?
I'm a sideboard Blood Moon guy. I think a lot of people bring it in far too often too. I've had a love-hate relationship with that card for a very long time. Many people know that. definitely sideboard.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. Gentlemen, do you have any questions for Mr. Dan regarding Standard or anything else that's outstanding?
Mr. Dan.
In the back?
No. I just wanted to say Mr. Dan.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I know that you guys have some crazy testing to do.
I don't know if it's crazy, well, but it's certainly
crazy testing.
Testing, but
got some amount to do.
KYT said we'd probably only get a short amount of time with you guys tonight, so
you guys can have as much time as you want.
Oh, nice! All right,
effective testing.
Effective.
Yeah, I think it's probably important.
Yeah. So if you want to give us back to the man and let him sign off to the masses after you do so yourself,
yeah, by all means.
Anyone that you want to give shout-outs to or say hello to that are listening out there in Internet Radio Land?
Well, I don't know if he listens, but I guess I should wish Pascal all the best for this weekend coming up, because Alex is going to bring his A game.
Alex listens to the show, so yeah, make sure you get, like, if you give one love without the other, they give you shit.
Well, Pascal, all the best. Alex, you know that you're the best.
Oh, there you go.
He knows it. Don't worry, he knows it.
Yeah, he knows it all too well.
He won't let you forget.
And he reminds you every single time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Well, Dan, thanks so much for the time, man. It was actually really good having you on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, cool. Maybe some other time too.
That would be sweet. Well, I think we missed. Right. I think we missed the boat on your GP win, and so that's our bad. But hopefully, when you guys crush this Pro Tour, we'll just have you back.
Well, we'll see if that happens. Maybe it all stems on Lucas, because he's got to break it. But
I mean, he does so often, though, right?
He does reasonably often. Yeah, he also goes off the deep end every other time. So
that's true. Well, it's like
right,
it's like
well, I'll pass you back to KYT.
It's like Fournier just like cleans him up three cards, and then it's fine, right? All right, sweet. Yeah, thanks.
All right, see you guys.
Yeah.
All right,
KYT. That was good.
He was, he's a lot goofier in person. Like, you just put him on a podcast and he's all Mr. Serious here.
You know what I noticed too? Is that, well, actually, that's in person, he's like Mr. Super Serious. He's like fucking Batman. But,
actual Batman.
But he sounds so Le Francais on the phone. Holy shit. Like, I've spoken with Dan before and he I was very surprised that he was from the East, had a French last name, and sounded zero hints of French. And then today, it was like, it was all
home, what I mean.
Yeah, it was like the chef from The Little Mermaid. He's like, oh, you got to get the Jesus and Danissa. And I'm sure I'm just catching it, and most people aren't going to notice it, but I was quite surprised. Monsieur Lantier. Very good, Dan Lantier. For the Americans that are listening, Lantier, try to spell it in our comments. Kyle, don't put Dan Lanthier's name in the show notes.
Yeah, spoiler
it. Don't look it up. It's a fun little game. I just want you guys to try to spell Lanthier.
We'll give you a tip. We love our vowels. Just throw vowels at it.
Yeah. You know, like,
why use one when two will do?
Yeah. But, man, what a smart guy.
Seriously.
Yeah. I'm excited. It's like a throwback to the original Manitou Private team, just purely Canadian, and hopefully we'll get there.
Nice.
One of us.
One of you.
All four of us.
Yeah, well, make sure that you guys don't fuck up Limited, huh?
Yeah, yeah, that's been the demise of many.
To listen to what Pascal tells you, and then you'll be
fine. It's been, the funniest thing that happened. I don't know if I'll be the only one that thinks it's funny. Like, Dan likes to goof off. We did a draft two days ago where I'm playing against Andrew Novarai, and it's like me and him were fairly into this really tight game. I think I'm ahead on board, but then he plays a fairy miscreant. The 1/1 flying for blue.
Oh yeah.
That if you have another one, like, you get to draw a card, right? If you play one and you have one in play, you get to draw a card. And I would never play that. Like, I think it's just too, like, 1/1 for one flying, too lackluster.
I would never play that card. The other day, somebody that I was drafting with played like fucking four of them. Like, what are you picking this card over? Nothing.
So I'm playing against Andrew. He plays one, and like we're both very concentrated in the game. He plays another, and Dan's just watching. He's like, "Oh my god, he's comboing off!" I just go nuts. And then after he plays the second one, he's like, "Go!" It's like, that's it.
That's it. That's all.
That's your combo.
That's your whole combo.
2 1/1s, draw a card.
Oh,
yeah. So fucking that was sweet. A good moment. That shows Dan's funny side.
Nice.
Dan is very much like Doug.
You know, I guess I haven't hung around Doug enough.
He's like super serious mode,
Young-hearted at the same time.
Yeah, but if you don't know him, then he can appear to be like very serious and scary.
So you got to do that, Jay, when someone plays more than one of those, and be like really scared.
He's comboing off.
It's like the stupidest combo ever.
Yep.
So I'll let you guys go. I'm gonna head out back to Dan and in the training zone. So thanks a lot, room. Guys.
Yep.
I love you guys. Talk to you guys soon.
Peace.
Bye.
We love you.
Well, there goes the KYT, ladies and gentlemen, deep in the Pro Tour testing tank in Ottawa. So hopefully you guys appreciated that little glimpse into what's going on out there. I know I certainly did. I think Dan was really, he was really well spoken, huh?
Yeah, he knows what he's talking about.
Knows what's up. Yeah.
He was using words.
It was really nice on the phone, too. I mean, normally he and I have we have an interesting relationship.
Yep.
So, in public. But he was really nice, and I thought it was really great. We should be like that more often. Hopefully he listens to this. Anyways. It was good. All right, so did you guys play any Magic this week?
I did.
Oh, Jer, what happened?
I cubed.
I went and played the Modern.
You played the Modern? Okay.
Yeah. So I'd been playing Jun, like the Namsung Wook Jun.
Yep.
And I decided that I just wanted to get away from it, primarily because I had gotten my playset of Paths already.
Oh, okay.
So
I don't need to win anymore. Yeah. I can dirtle. Okay.
So I sat there and said, like, yeah. No, well, close enough. It's actually what I've been kind of playing while we've been doing this thing. I busted out and sleeved Old Faithful. Old Faithful being Restore Balance.
No, oh, Restore Balance.
Restore Balance. That's one of my other Old Faithfuls. So I brought out Restore Balance, and I figured, you know what? If I can dodge Grixis decks, I'm going to have a great night, because it is actually ridiculous against Jund. It's just like playing Living Death against Jund, except like you get to kill them with zero permanents on the table instead of them having lands. So I sit down in my very first matches against a Grixis player, and the one thing that I kind of had going for me is that the Grixis player I was playing against had no idea that this was a deck.
Oh, no.
He's like, what are you doing? Like, what do you mean, like, you tap a land and then return it to your hand and put this artifact out? Like, what is that? Uh-huh. So little things like that, and I suspend Greater Gargadon. It's like, 10 turns, that's ambitious. And it's like, yeah. It's like Violent Outburst, sack all of my lands. You go down to 2 cards in hand and have no permanence. And it's just like, oh, okay. Now I understand what just happened.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And them trying to figure out how to deal with it. So it was pretty funny because, like, I ended up losing game one because I couldn't, like, get everything to kind of work out. Like, I couldn't get my hand emptied because I play Artifacts and Planeswalkers. So not being able to get my hand empty, he was always able to like keep like a swamp and a delve creature. So either an angler or a Tassiger. So he was able to take game one for me, even though like I blew up, like I was getting like 6-for-1s all over the place. And like the one time I did get the Gargadon into play to like chump block one of his guys, he was able to go land terminate it. So it was just like really awkward kind of like place where it's like, okay, you know, I lost that first one. My opponent kind of got blitzed. He has an idea what's going on. But I won the next two pretty handedly because he didn't know what... oh my goodness, what is the name of that spell? It's the red trap that if they cast a blue spell, you can do a deflection.
Oh, Ricochet Trap.
Yeah, Ricochet Trap. So that's a good card against like their counter spells and all that kind of stuff because you just counter, you redirect the counter spell to the Ricochet Trap itself. So when they try and do something like... Reman, they don't even get to draw a card.
Because
it's no longer a legal target. So, like, little things like that where it's just like, okay, this is working out really well for me. So, I did some of that, and yeah, it went really, really well. Like, the first match, I end up winning the match against the guy there, and I'm like, okay, that's my worst matchup. So, if that was my worst matchup, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
I play against a mono green guy who's playing, like, the green devotion deck. And it's like Stranglerout Geist with Rancor, and just like, wow, that's a card that actually is really difficult for me to kill because I need to kill it twice, and I can't kill anything twice. So he takes game one for me, and then game two, I just get him really early on. I actually bring in Anger of Gods. I have a Miser's Anger of Gods in my sideboard, and I have it in my opening hand. Yeah. So he drops like 3 creatures into it, and I kill them all, okay. And then proceed to just like kill all of his lands and get a Greater Gargadon going and pound his face in. Then game three, I draw the Miser's Anger of God in my opening hand again, and I get him for like a 3-for-1 again, and just get him. Third match, I play against Affinity, and like that's not even a matchup at all. Like they drop all their stuff on the board, but I can go off on turn two, so it just like I lose all the cards in my hand, but I top deck way better than him. So,
yeah, because all of his like, O1s don't mean
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, it's like Ornithopter, and I'm like, oh man, I guess I'll just draw Jace. Like, oh yeah, I've got artifact lands, so they work. Yeah, this isn't good for you, buddy.
Yeah.
And then in the finals, I end up playing against like there's a fellow at our store, a young kid named Matt Ian Seddon, and he if he keeps playing the way that he's playing, if he plays as much as he's playing, he's gonna get a cup of coffee. He's gonna like go and play a pro tour or two. Like he's that good. He's a really strong control player. He's very patient. He just plays control really well. So if he can kind of find like the time when control's the big deck And he kind of makes everything work out. Like, I think he's got a very good, solid shot of playing in a Pro Tour. So, very, very, you know, excited for playing him, because I always have good matches with him. And he's playing like Grixis Twin, but more control side. And game one, he finally gets the twin off on me, but I did get like one balance off on him. Game two, we have like these like random click things, and I'm pushing him into a situation where I can sneak a violent outburst in and get him, and I end up getting him with it. He just ends up bricking, not able to get a twin. The big thing that got him was he at one point taps me out, and on like turn four tries to like get me with a twin, and I exile Simeon Spirit Guide and dismember his guy. So like just like the no land had it anyways chump.
Yeah.
And then follow it up with like a balance that my hand was empty at that point there. So I rip him of all of his permanents essentially.
Wow. And,
like just like the sick follow ups.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was going really well in that sense. And unfortunately, we end up going to time, and it just goes into a situation where he like gets like this like Colgan's Command Snapcaster loop going on. And yeah. I just know that I can't win. And he manages to like pull out like I can't remember exactly what the draw was, but I think he got like his third Snapcaster Mage and had enough burn to just burn me out in the turns, whereas like I was just playing to the draw at that point there, like maybe I can get a path this way or something. But end up 3-1-ing with the deck, so it went really, really well. Did a follow-up, actually went and played in a PPTQ of Origin Sealed, and that was a lot of fun as well. I did some tweeting, actually. It was at a store in St. Albert.
Oh.
And store was just like the nut. Like it's Thunderground Games, and the guy who owns it, his name's Roy. And he just does like all of like these like just different things that you don't see enough out of stores.
Like what? Like
he feeds you. So like I paid $45 for a sealed. We had free, like he had Jelly Bellies, Sour Fish, that cheese popcorn stuff. Everywhere, water bottles, cans
like
of
just
Coke.
For free?
Just for free. He just, as he's walking by, like cleaning up garbage, asking everyone how they're doing, he like shook everyone's hand as they came into the store. He thanked everyone for coming. After the first round, the barbecue was on. He was stewing up hot dogs for everybody. We had a vegetarian at the table, Tim from Calgary. So he sat there and ordered pizza because he didn't have a vegetarian option. Like just all of, like these little things of like, yeah, this is what I'm going to do to, you know, make everyone feel like super welcome here.
Wow.
Wow.
So yeah, really, really cool. Just, yeah, an overall like great way to kind of run the tournament.
Sweet.
Yeah. So ended up draft or sealed. My sealed pool ended up making like a good aggressive red white deck. I didn't have any crazy bomb cards. But I had like a lot of aggressive early drops. I end up coming ninth. So, you know, like the awesome win my winning in, but don't actually make it in because somehow I dropped 10 percentage points and the guy I was trying to leapfrog only dropped 7. So.
Yikes.
Yeah. But it was really fun because I like that, you know, from the judge side of things, from that standpoint, I really like how there are there are certain cards in every set that kind of showcase a different part of the rules that most people in a core set wouldn't really recognize. For instance, in this set, there is the spell, the white spell. My deck, I had three of the guy that made you sacrifice an attacking or a defending creature.
Celestial Flare.
Celestial Flare. So Celestial Flare, for a lot of new players, they don't understand how you can kind of abuse this card. Because in this set, like, it's a really aggressive. Like, that's the one thing that I found is that, like, this is a very aggressive sealed format. Like, yeah, I think Origins is going to be very, very aggressive. Very low to the ground. Very Zendikar-like. Like, lots of bears, lots of attacking early on. But you'll have, like, these situations where, like, I had an opponent and he's got, like, some nutty guy, like I think it was the 3-2 with renown, so he's like a 4-3, and he was attacking also with like a goblin token, and it's like, okay, so I'll block your goblin token, and in the combat damage step, I'll cast Celestial Flare targeting you. So I took the 4 points of damage, but since I had killed the token, it's still in combat. That thing is still an attacking creature, so he still has to sacrifice it. So like ways that you can play around your opponent attacking with little dorks aside from their big guys, so you can still Celestial Flare them. And like some of the guys that I did that to just didn't understand how that interaction worked, and like that's one of the things that I enjoy is kind of explaining.
A lot of them will look at a card like that too and say like, oh, Celestial Flare is a good card, and then you go like, oh, I make a Thopter guy, and you're like, wow, Celestial Flare is fucking terrible now.
Yeah.
Because like,
exactly,
you know, and it's like, well, no, this is kind of how it works.
Yeah. And like, how do you play around like all these Thopters and stuff like that show up
with
Celestial Flare decks?
Nice.
Yeah, so just a generally cool good time. Like, just it was a fun tournament. Had like Rob Smith came down from Calgary, Tim Bjornjal, I think his name is.
Yeah.
So they were, you know, good to have there. Had some of the Edmonton guys. None of my like regular crowd actually came out to that tournament, though. I think everyone's kind of afraid of Sealed right now, which is really odd for Edmonton. A lot of our Sealed guys are not really playing right now because they're either qualified other ways. So just really strange.
It's too bad. And I guess they can't play in the pre-TQs if they're already qualified, right?
Yeah, that's right. If you're already qualified, you cannot play pre-TQ.
Yeah, so I guess there's that. So, I mean, I would think that they'd be clamoring for every effort that they can to play the format, right? Like, at least to play with the cards as much as possible. But
yeah,
they obviously just physically are legally not allowed to.
Yep.
Sweet. All right. Jay, you played Cube this weekend?
Yeah, and I did Origins draft on Friday for FNM or whatever.
Oh my god, you went to FNM?
Yeah, because it was Origins draft.
Holy shit. How'd you do?
I 3-0'd easily.
What'd you draft?
I drafted Black-Green Elves.
How many of the uncommon kill you elves did you have?
Which elf is... I had one of those. Yeah. I was so disappointed. Me and the other guy playing Black-Green Elves both opened them.
Oh.
Pack one, pick one. And we're like, yeah, Black-Green Elves, what? And then both just were like, oh, you opened it? How many do you have? One? Oh, I also opened one. How many do I have, you ask? Only one. That's disappointing. But yeah, it was like fucking no contest. Like, my deck had no cards in it. Like, it had no rares. It had like it had nothing in it. It was a fucking, it's garbage. Like, it, which is what I kind of like about the format. So let me just pull this up. So the deck had one, I think, one piece of removal. Which was a Reeve Soul. And I think that Reeve Soul, like Jeremy was saying earlier, like because the format is very fast, I think Reeve Soul is actually a very good removal card. It's a lot of people are like kind of looking at it like it's not because of the stipulation that it has to be power 3 or less. But like when you're
playing 3 or less hits a lot.
It hits a lot of things. And when you're playing an aggressive deck, you just want to kill everything they have and just attack them every turn. That's all I was doing. So I played one Reeve Soul, which I don't think, I think I drew one time. The other thing that kind of hurts Reeve Soul is that it is a sorcery, which is a little bit unfortunate, but, you know, whatever. Some notable cards that are in my sideboard. Like Necromantic Summons, which is literally just Rise from the Grave with upside. And normally Rise from the Grave is an insane card in core set draft. But because I don't have any removal and all my guys suck, like, the best case scenario for me that I Rise from the Grave is, like, I Rise from the Grave my uncommon elf, right?
Yeah.
And, like, kill you. So that had to be cut. But I did get a foil one, which is pretty sweet. Like, this probably will just become Rise from the Grave in Cube, actually.
Huh.
Right? Because Spell Mastery makes it +2/+2. And so there's, like, this is the same exact card other than that, right?
Yep.
It just doesn't make it a black zombie or whatever, but who cares about that? I had two Mantle of Webs in my sideboard, which are the +1/+3 reach, and like those are again traditionally terrible cards. But the I've noticed that the Black Green Elves deck is insanely soft to flyers. So I played against the guy that was doing like the fairy draw card combo. He's comboing off. And like basically he killed me with one of those fairies and the high flyer, the 2/3 Drake that can only block flyers.
Yep.
Yeah.
He just played those, like, turn one and then turn three, and then just attacked me. and killed just over and over.
Yikes.
And I couldn't do anything. So I sided in a web of, or a mantle of webs, just so that I had something to do there. But I've noticed that the elves deck, if you're not fast enough, which, I mean, ideally you want to just be killing them on turn four, which is what I did constantly. But in the one game where I didn't, or where he bounced my guy, or he had a blocker, I find, like, if they can gum you up, like, if they just play blockers and block you, it doesn't matter even if you're killing their blockers. If they're just slowing you down, the black-green elves deck is hard to kind of, if you don't have a lot of those uncommon guys, it can be hard to kind of overcome because your creatures are so small. So, like, even getting, like, the plus two and fight card for four mana is, like, a trade, probably, you know?
Yeah.
And then I had two Shambling Ghouls, which I thought were going to be better than they were. They're the 2/3 guys that come into play tapped. And I just figured, like, oh yeah, my deck's aggressive. I don't really need these guys for blockers, but, like, a 2/3 can effectively attack into everything in this format and not die. But, you know, I had to cut him. Cut an Antuco Husk, because I don't really know why that card's good. I know a lot of people think it's good from, like, 40 years ago, but I don't really know why it's good. And then a Rocks Mauler, the 4/4 Trample Renown guys. I just wanted to cut my curve down to 4.
Yep.
So I had to cut that card. It's a very good card. I wish I would have had, like, a Vastwood Gorger or something. But whatever. And then I cut fucking Warhorn. So, like, Warhorn, you're saying, like, Warhorn? Warhorn is just, like, literally is just Trumpet Blast, but for your team all the time. So your attacking creatures get +1/+0 for 3 mana. Now, Warhorn seems like a terrible fucking card. But if you look at cards like Somberwald Alpha, which is like your blocked creatures get +1/+1, that card is like an insane bomb, and Warhorn is obviously not that good, but I've seen the black-green elves deck play Warhorn or two, and it just basically makes their attacks much more profitable, especially if you have ways to like Titanic Growth and give your guys Death Touch and just things like that, right? Just makes your guys like a little bit scarier, I guess.
Sure.
And yeah. And then a card that we were kind of all excited for in the at the preview stage, the spoilers.
Yeah.
Was Veteran Sidearm, and
that's enchanted equipped creature gets +1/+1.
Yep, and it's just cheap. Just gets on it.
Yeah.
I've cut this from every single deck I've ever drafted or sealed, and so has everybody else I've talked to. I've never seen someone play this card, which is very shocking to me. It seems better than that. So those are like, that's like the notable stuff that I drafted that I could have played. And then, so my deck is like, I don't know, my deck is like fucking just Bonker Town, USA. So,
it's like... That sounds like a fun place.
It is, man, it is. Okay, so I talked about, I guess we can start with like the one drops. Oh, I drafted an on-color Llanowar Wastes.
Nice.
Sweet. But so I had two of the one drop. I had two one drops. I had two of the black ones, which is like when you attack, if your opponent doesn't have an elf, they lose a life. And he's a 1/2. That card actually surprisingly does like a lot of work. And then I had the green one as well, which does something. Oh no. I had the other black one, which is, like, you can tap it to add green if you cast an elf, or you can give an elf Death Touch.
Yes.
Yeah, that guy is very good.
Yes, yes,
that
very
guy
good.
Is very, very good. So I had those three one-drops, which were pretty good. The only thing that's kind of bad about it is that I find that the black-green elves deck is mostly green.
Yes.
So it's a little awkward to have those as your one-drops, just a little. But I, like, the cards that I was missing is, like, I didn't get, like, Eye Blight's -2/-2 or whatever. So that was a little awkward, like, playing against people. I mean, like, it was good that they couldn't use it against me either, but unfortunate that, you know, I couldn't find one. I had the Somberwald Alpha. I didn't realize how good that guy was. I just drafted him, I think, because he was, like, he was the best on-color card in the pack. So he just, for those of you that don't know, he's a 3/2 for 4, and he just reads whenever a creature that you control is blocked, it just gets +1/+1. And then for 2 mana, he can give a creature trample. So when he attacks, he's effectively either 3 damage unblockable, because they're never going to want to try to trade with him, or he just fucking kills whatever you block with and then just tramples you and just gives your team trample. And he's obviously very good with the Death Touch elf as well. And then I had 2 Llanowar Empath. That card, I don't know how good this card is. In a deck like this, it almost always just reads, just draw a card, right? So Llanowar Empath is the one that when he enters the battlefield, you scry to, and then you reveal the top card of your library, and if it's a creature, you just draw that card.
Yep, yep.
So in this deck, he's effectively just a 4-mana 2/2 that draws you a creature card.
Yep.
Which is good, and like there was a game where to win, I had to draw my Shaman of the Pack, and I scryed and drew it. But 4-mana 2/2 that doesn't impact the board right now is a little bit overcosted, in my opinion. The bread and butter of the deck was the 4 Eva Force Mages that I had.
Nice!
So, when you, like, just going, like, turn 1 guy, sometimes turn 2 guy, I didn't have a whole lot of 2 drops, into, like, Yiva's Force Mage, attack you, Yiva's Force Mage, my Force Mage, attack you, kill your guy with Snuff Out, or whatever that spell's called, attack you, play Shaman of the Pack, you're dead.
Wow.
So that was fun. And then a card that I was actually quite surprised at how good this card was, and I don't know why, it's because I'm probably just an idiot, is Might of the Masses. So when I look at Might of the Masses, it's a 1-mana instant that gives a guy 1/1 for each creature you control.
Yeah.
When I look at a card like that, I immediately think, like, this is much worse than Giant Growth, because Giant Growth is always +3/+3, and this, on average, I think is going to be, like, +2/+2.
Okay.
Then I realize it's each creature, not each other creature.
Yeah.
Then I realize that when you're playing black-green elves, you're just constantly
making, like, creatures. Yeah.
Getting, yeah, and this is like 5 all the time. There was a turn where on turn 4, I had 5 elves, and I just attacked with all my guys, and I had 2 Might of the Masses in my hand, and I hit him for 19. Like, he just died. He's like trying to do combat math, and I'm like, no. Like, you know, any way that you block, you are dead. Like, you are tapped out, and any blocks you make, you have died. And he's like, what do you mean? And I was like, and I just was like, well, I have these. These I thought sucked, but it's now game 1, turn 3, and you're dead. So, they don't suck so much.
Nice.
And then I ended up scooping like a Fleshbag Marauder, which I don't know. I just took it because it was, like, removal,
okay.
And I'm really partial to removal and formats and stuff, and I like sac removal because it gets around, like you know, indestructible or big guys, but, yeah. Like, what Jeremy said is, like, or, like, what we were kind of talking about earlier is, like, sac removal is good, but you have to be smart about it, and Celestial Flare lets you do that. Fleshbag Marauder, not so much.
No.
Because, like, there's so many times you're just like, yeah, make them sac a guy. You're like, should I play a Fleshbag here? Make them sack their blocker and then just attack for, like, 2 or 1? Or should I play, like, a Force Mage, attack for 4, and then save my Marauder? Oh, yeah, that sounds way better. And then they just go stop your guy. And you're like, ow. And then you're like, okay, whatever, I attack. They're going to chump with the Thopter. And then they do. And then they just go Thopter guy.
Yeah.
And you're like, fucking goddamn Dragon Fodder.
This card is hot garbage.
Yeah. So, like, Fleshbag Marauder is not actually as good as it would appear that, it, like, in previous sets. Like, they did really well. Like, this set is really good, I think. It's because there's, so far, there's nothing that's, like, super OP that I've noticed. And all the cards that I was super excited about, like, oh, yeah, Fleshbag Marauder's back. It's a getcha card. It's not that it's bad now. It's just that it's, like, not as getcha as it used to be. And then I played a one of Orchard Spirit, because the Orchard Spirit actually I find is really good in the elf deck, because they just can never block it, so it's, like, great for Might of the Masses, Titanic Growth, Yiva's Force Mage, or just,
I think that that's a solid card in green in general.
Yeah, like, you can, I think so too. Yeah,
well, especially with you saying how the format is A, so creature driven, and B, so fast. I mean,
yeah,
there's basically 3 to 4 swarm decks in the format, like, in the limited format, right? You got elves, well, fuck, maybe more. You got elves, you got goblins, you got thopters, and you got white wing.
Yeah, and then there's, like, the combo, like, the red-white, like, renown, which is, like, a swarm deck in that, like, every creature is resilient and annoying.
Yeah, that 2/2 vigilance guy with renown is just, like...
Oh, he's gross.
And he's a common, and then they follow that up with the 3/2 renown guy, who's also a common, and you're like, well, which one do I fucking block?
Yeah.
Asshole. So, yeah, so, I really liked it. I easily 3-0'd. Like, I didn't like, even break a sweat. Not even against the other elf deck, which I thought was better than my deck, and I just fucking demolished that guy.
Nice.
Yeah, and it was really fun. Like, the draft itself was really fun. I asked on Twitter before I went to go do the draft, I asked, like, I'm going to go draft Origins. What's the key? Because I had heard that the sealed was good, but that the single player format, like, cause I only played two at a giant before that, right? So I had heard that single player format, and it was sealed, which is a little different than draft, I guess, for speed and stuff, but was just really unforgiving. So I didn't want to go into the draft with, like, my preconceptions of, like, oh, take removal, take bombs, if I'm just going to lose to Welkin Turn and Trusty Machete, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So, because that's, like, really annoying. That's, like, a super feel bad, especially when it's, like, the first draft of, or, like, or you're a new player, where you just, like, don't get the format, but you, like, look at cards like Gideon or, like, fucking, I don't know what a bomb is in this format, because I just was blind.
Archangel of Tithes, I think.
Sure, sure. Will
be your biggest bomb. Actually, one thing just kind of the side go off on is I find that this set is really not as punishing with the rares.
There's, like, there's not half as many unbeatable ones.
Like, that, yeah, like, the thing is, it's yeah. I was under the impression that it's not it's not a Battlecruiser set.
No, like, it's not like you're getting beat by all these stupid garbage, like, better than you rares all the time.
Yeah, and there's so less
have a chance.
There's less times where you're just absolutely ranching someone and then they just, like, flip over their dragon and you lose too. Right? Like, there's less times that happens, like, where it's just, like, there's no reason that this person should ever beat you, and then you draw your, you know, your ninth land, and they just draw their dragon, and then you die. And you're like, well, great. That happens a lot less, I've been told. But, like I said, so, like I was saying, is I was just under the impression that, like, it was just unforgiving in that, like, not so much about, like, the crazy bombs, but just, like, that, turn three, turn four, and turn five are very important.
Yes.
And if you're behind a turn, then you have a very hard time coming back because it's very obvious that you're behind. So, and that's kind of what we did last time when we played green blue, is things like I play a three drop, Yiva's Force Mage, my 2/2 is a 4/4 now. You can't block it. Like, you block it and I guess absorb damage, but, like, you use your life as a resource thinking, okay, whatever, and I'm not going to lose my flyer because later on I can get more Thopters or whatever. I can attack them back for three. So if I'm taking four and they're taking three, it's really not that bad, and it's only till end of turn. And then we just go, like untap, play our fourth land, bounce your guy, and now you just got time walked. And then we bounce your guy again, time walk, and then we put them to sleep, time walk, and then they javelin them or doom blade. Like, there's all these. So it was getting to the point where, like, I was worried about that, and because of my penchant for drafting removal and bombs from Cube, I was like, well, I don't want that. So I said on Twitter, like, I'm gonna go draft Origins, and I knew not many people would get back to me because it's new. But I said, what should I draft? And I actually got a really good piece of advice from Cody Crossman, who I haven't talked to in, like, ages. But
Did he make fun of you?
No, it was surprising. he said that what you should do is you should focus on one of the multicolored uncommons and build around it.
Okay.
So, like, if you get an early that Shaman of the Pack, which is, like, black green elves, you try to build around that. If you get an early Thunderclap Wyvern, which is, like, is it, like, a 3/3 flyer?
I think it's a 3/3 flyer or 2/3
flyer for four with flash that pumps your flyers. Oh, yeah. I think that's what it is. I think he's a 2/2, but he gets 1/1 or something. But anyway, but, like, so then, like, and I've played that deck before. I played, like, the blue white flyers deck, and, like, some of the flyers are, like, renowned. The charging griffin is a 2/2 for four, but when he attacks, he's a 3/3. So with the thunderclap guy, he's, like, a 4/4 for four that has flying. Like, he's air elemental. And so just things like that, right? Is that you try to build around the uncommon. And it actually worked. And actually, a lot of people at the table were doing that. So it seems to be either, like, a strategy of some kind. So I just basically did that. I got lucky, and I opened Shaman of the Pack. And I took it. And then I just took all the elf. If I saw an elf, I just took that elf.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would have. I really like the best friend elf, the 2/2 bear. That
that guy's so
that
good.
That guy's really good. And I would have liked at least the one other Shaman of the Pack. Like, you hear about these guys that have, like, three of them in their deck, and you're like, yeah, like, what a nice day for you.
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, it was still fun, and I went 3-0, so I got 6 packs because they do double prizing, and I technically would have won the promo, but I don't need a Path to Exile that's like the 10th printing of it. So I gave that to my third round opponent that I beat in the finals, my elf brother. And then, you know, we got to pick up our pre-release prize packs. So I have like now like a box of Origins as opposed to some. So, and it was just like a fun, the good thing is I had a great time. And there were so many people there. Not so many, but like so many as opposed to normal for draft, that they did a 10-man pod and a 9-man pod. And normally I fucking hate that and that ruins the draft, but it didn't. It was still fun.
Oh.
Yeah. So I like Origins. I'm down with that shit. I mean, like, to be fair, like, Origins isn't an amazing set in terms of, like, I don't know, fucking fetch lands or, I don't know. I don't know what people classify as an amazing set. But it's, like, an amazing set in that, like, I love the flavor of it. Like, Menace and Renown. I think those are, like, my dick is just, like, so hard whenever I see a card with that. It just, like, makes so much sense. And it, like, just very obviously you know exactly what these things mean or whatever, right? And the cards are, like, good. They're not, like, they're not the best cards, like, in terms of being powerful. Like we said, it's not Battlecruiser Magic, but they're, like, it's a good environment that they've concocted, I find. I mean, it's early, so that could change, but you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's good.
No, I really like what's going on with it. Yeah, it'd be nice if there was more value and stuff like that in the packs.
Yes. Like... Yeah, it would be nice if there was more value. You're right.
Yeah. But I got my 2 Korean boxes, and...
Did you open them?
Yes, I did.
What did you get?
My first one, I got, like, a regular Chandra, regular Giddy. I got, like, 5 Mythics in my first box. It was, like, great Mythic box. It just, I didn't get, like, the Angel. I didn't get Liliana, who I was really looking for. But I did crack a regular Gideon and a foil Gideon.
Ooh. So
I got a foil Korean Gideon, which was pretty badass. No Nissa.
All the money.
Yeah, that guy's like, I think right now if I put him up on eBay, I'd probably start him somewhere in like the 120 range. Yeah. Like, he'd probably pay for the box.
Yeah.
But the second box was like just terrible. I got a Liliana, so I was happy that I got my Liliana, but there wasn't really anything else there. Got all of like my rares and stuff that I needed, so I was really happy for that. I think I've got my full play set of Days Undoing. So I'm happy about that because I think that card can be pretty special. You know, it's always good. I kind of like box time. I'll probably pick up a couple more as time progresses and stuff like that, just because that's kind of what I do. Although I have to spend a little bit less money because I recently picked up a PS4. My wife needed something to watch Blu-rays on.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And I was like, oh, well, if we need a Blu-ray player, we might as well just buy one of these PlayStation things.
Smell opportunity.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I was like, I really want to play this Fallout game, so we can spend the money now, or we can buy a Blu-ray player and then buy one of these later.
Well, and like I don't know about the PS4, but I know that the PS3 was, and maybe still is, the best Blu-ray player you could buy anyway.
I really don't know, but I got one, and I've been playing a lot of Rocket Arena because that game is, like, entertaining.
I don't know what that is, but...
If you go on Twitch, you'll find somebody playing it. Okay. Essentially, it's rocket cars that can jump and flip and have, like, a jet engine on the back, like the Batmobile.
Oh, okay.
And you play soccer with them.
Holy
shit. Like, a gigantic ball, and it is, like, just very entertaining because, like, you can do, like, these, like what do you call it? Like, windmill kicks and all that kind of stuff with, like, a car.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's very, very entertaining. This weekend was very entertaining also in that it was Evo weekend.
Yep.
And my buddy Nick, that I traveled to a bunch of events with, you know Nick, Jay, he's a massive Street Fighter guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy who would go into the arcade and like would throw 50 cents in a machine, and you'd come back 4 hours later, and he'd still be on the same quarters with a lineup of very disappointed people next to him.
Yeah, he's the hustler, yeah.
Yeah, he was the hustler. I remember we went to PAX, and they did a big Street Fighter tournament. He got second at that tournament.
Wow.
And everyone was like, this guy is no good. This guy's the best in the West Coast for this, best in the West Coast for that. And, like, the guy who beat him, like, beat him handedly, but he worked his way up that bracket.
Yeah, second place, and that's nothing to sneeze at.
Yeah, so... We always get to Street Fighter games. He usually beats the tar out of me, but I ended up buying like a brand new arcade stick for my PS4 and did my pre-order for Street Fighter. So they got the beta coming out later this week, so I'm going to be playing some Street Fighter V like a degen.
Nice.
Yeah, because I enjoy it.
See, it's funny. It's never something that, like, I used to enjoy fighting games, but I was always like way better on the control pad than I was a joystick. So that's just the way I was, but that was like as a kid, right? Yeah. I stopped playing fighting games when they turned into like Marvel versus Capcom.
Yes, and that's a very important distinction because Marvel versus Capcom is like, it's a seizure game. I can't handle
it. Yes, there is.
Oh man, I love that game.
There is so much happening, and you need to be doing so much at like the, and it's micro reactions.
Well,
you know
yeah.
I mean?
See, like I play those games casually, so I like them for button mashing. Like I don't play them like and get like the mic like because you're right. Like I hate those games where like you play against someone and like they have the timing down, so they're beating you by like timing.
And there's nothing
they're
you can
playing
do.
Playing footsies like, with you, and they're reversing and EXing and all this kind of stuff. And
like when there's nothing you can do against those opponents, no matter how you block, because they know how to open you up at any given moment, and you have no idea what you're doing. And and they know all the animations, and they know like at what cell to react. Like,
I don't like that.
Playing against people at that level in those games is just it's not right. Now, I was watching a little bit of that on Sunday because I was like doing laundry, the wife wasn't home, and I'm trying to figure out what the big deal is, because like I've never really enjoyed watching these sorts of things.
Yeah.
But I caught some of the I guess it was the Marvel versus Capcom that was being played for a while. I watched
Marvel versus Capcom would have been like really close to the end of the night for
me. Yeah, so it was just before the grand finals. I watched like four matches before the grand finals.
Yeah.
And then later on, I guess I watched some of the I watched one match in particular of the Street Fighter, and it was the one with the guy who plays Ken versus the guy who plays Akuma.
Yes, you're talking about.
Two Japanese players.
There was only two Americans in the top eight.
Tokido, something like that. Not to be confused with the Mexican and appetizer, but
Tokido and probably Momochi.
That was it. Yeah, so. Street Fighter is traditionally not one of those micro move games, right? Yeah. Like it's a lot slower paced, but where you can really understand the true mastery of the game is watching people execute with regards to range acknowledgement.
Oh yes, absolutely. Like footsies is massive once you get into like competitive.
It was crazy. Like I'm watching these two, and like I haven't played Street Fighter in years. But I have a very strong appreciation for the way that some of those games, it was crazy talk.
Yeah, like
the control has so precise.
Yeah, one of the things like, and it's very interesting, like even like to see their meta. I love Street Fighter commentary.
Yeah.
Like Street Fighter commentary, like, you know, the energy that Cedric brings to commentary, how he's like really excited, gets really involved in stuff like that. Cedric could be a Street Fighter commentary guy.
Oh, easily.
Because all of their commentary guys are like that. They're all high energy. They're all like really, really excited. And the game is as fast paced as it is. It really lends to that type of excitement.
Agree.
And it's funny because when people ask me about Magic, I always describe it to people as a mix between poker and chess.
Yep.
Poker in that you have to do a lot of bluffing. You have to understand what your outs are. You have to do a lot of representing and picking up on like non-tangible evidence of what's going on in the game. And then chess, and then that. The cards that are on the table, there is a bit of a perfect information game there where it's like, how do I use my pieces? How do I get a couple turns ahead of my opponent? How do I set them up for this? It's funny because the commentators for Street Fighter, especially Street Fighter 4, they describe it as speed chess and poker.
Wow.
And their whole thing about it is like the speed chess about it is that like you have to make information with what you're seeing, but you have to be very quick about it. And then there's poker because there's a lot of bluffs, there's a lot of feints, there's a lot of like ways to kind of hide what you're doing and be deceptive. Hmm. So, it's very interesting to see how they were going on about that. But I really want to like just, oh my goodness, I want to find a match and just like let people like kind of see it. Like we were talking about spacing and all this kind of stuff and seeing how like the metagame exists. There was a guy whose name was Gamerby. He came second to Momochi. And Gamerby was like, just like, could not, would not give up. He was, he always seemed like he was the underdog in every match that he was playing against. And his characters have an easy counter by this other character. And the guy picked this one character and he's like, okay, what am I going to do? And he picks another one. And all he does is he just stays back and he keeps the distance perfect the whole time. And the character has a heal. So all he does is kind of like take hits, take hits, take hits, take hits, build up his meter, get a couple counters in there, get a little bit of damage in. And then knowing where the space is perfect, whenever the person throws a fireball at him, he just runs away until the fireball disappears and heals himself. Wow. And he just did that and he time scanned the guy, essentially, is that he built his health up, got a few hits in, and when the clock ran out, he won.
Wow.
And like he played a whole set doing this strategy and it was just wild to see. And I wish I think it was Infiltration and Gamerby, but if you follow Gamerby, it would have been his second last match. So his loser bracket final.
Yeah.
That he did that.
I heard that Infiltration basically played all of his rounds very uniquely. Like his character choice and the way that he played, you know, was very unique compared to a lot of the others. So that lends itself to that. That information.
Yeah, Infiltration is really neat because Infiltration is like he has a wide catalog. Like you'll see a lot of players who will have like one guy that they're really good at.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll have like a second that, you know, exists as like a backup character to play if somebody's playing like a hard counter to your character. But Infiltration is the type of guy who like he goes in and he plays around, he finds out what his opponent's doing, and then he just goes, okay, this character that's widely considered as unplayable actually counters that strategy. So I'm going to play him and I'm going to stomp you with him.
Nice.
And it was very, very interesting to watch Infiltration's matches for the exact same thing. So.
Sweet. Jay, you've been doing some boo set stuff, right? You asked us to do some homework real quick.
Yeah. So the homework for the show today was, make me some non-magical auras. Because again, like Game of Thrones is like a low fantasy setting, right? So you can't have like fucking like wings of the dragon super flying or like fucking bear claws and all of a sudden like, you know, Jaime Lannister is a, you know, giant or something. Even things like giant growth don't work in this universe. So
you could, I sent you one. I have one for KYT.
Okay.
So when we come to it, when you're reading them, I'll tell you. I got another one.
Yeah, sure. Why don't we do that now?
Okay. So how about Kiss of the Viper or Viper's Kiss?
Sure.
And it is an enchantment for black or black one or whatever. It could be just black is fine.
Okay.
And enchanted creature gets death touch. And the artwork is the young little viper kissing Bronn in the prison.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's a pretty good one.
Hey.
It solves the problem, right?
Right.
Because non-magical enchantment exactly. That does something, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that.
And it's simple and clean.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, okay. All right. That's a good one. Great work, KYT.
Nice.
Nice.
What about you, Jer?
Okay, so I went with how in like a fantasy setting like that, in a low magic setting, that sometimes that you gain a role and the power that comes with that role. So the card that I made would be like part of like a cycle, I'm sure. And I can't remember if there was a name for it or anything like that because, you know, I read books a long time ago. I haven't watched the show. But essentially, it was like a spy master appointment. Like, it was someone who was in charge of the spy network.
Sure, okay.
And it was a blue-blue, an enchantment aura, and it had to enchant a legendary creature. So what I wanted to make is that since we're a character-oriented set, I didn't want just generic guy to have it. I wanted to make sure that it went onto a named character.
So kind of like the opposite of renown.
Yes, right?
Like renown, the flavor of renown is that you are the generic Jobin, but you become a hero by your valor. And in this sense, you're like a generic guy would never just become the president of the United States.
Yeah. So this one here, I went with like a Spy Master. It was Enchanted Creature gains Menace and draw a card whenever this creature deals combat damage to a player. And it was blue-blue. And I went with Menace just because I thought that, you know, that might lend into the Spy Master thing. But in the color wheel, it might not be right. It might be better just to make it as an unblockable.
Right.
The having to put it on a legendary creature seems like a very big negative. Made it double blue, so it was a bit harder to splash. But I wanted to keep it very aggressive costed. So it might be better off if it was just unblockable. It might even be better off if it offered some sort of like defensive perk or even like a hexproof proof, like make it like a really nasty pair of pants for this character because of like what would be done there. But you could have like, you know, like a King of Westeros, or you could have like what were the people at the wall, the gray.
Oh, the black or whatever, the crows.
Yeah, the crows. Like you could have like a leader type role there. So like having just a different a set of them that like these would be.
Oh, that's actually kind of interesting. So you could have like the Master of Spy, the Master of Coin.
Yeah, exactly.
The leader of the Night's Watch, the fucking leader of the guard or whatever.
Yeah. That was the kind of concept with it, was to say that this is an environment where nothing stays the same. People don't stay the same. They usually die. And these roles are changing hands as like politics goes through. So this was like a way of saying like this is a character who's now gained this this role.
Right. Wow, that's good. You like put some thought into that.
I really like that idea.
Yeah, I like that idea too.
And it's an enchantment, a way to enchant a creature with a non-magical setting. It's saying that they've achieved political power. This is a political enchantment.
Like bestowing it on them. That's sweet. Mm-hmm. Sweet. Yeah.
Awesome, actually. I really like that.
And it gives you some more design space, because now you can, like, and even if you wanted to make those, like, uncommon auras of multicolor, then you could like, design them in such a way that if your Lannisters are whatever color,
yeah,
then if you're, like, the Lord of Casterly Rock, then you get these things as a result of being, you know, the Lord of Casterly Rock, but, like, the colors for the enchantment lend themselves to your... You know, so it's going to be easier to bestow that role onto, like, a Lannister if you're playing the Lannister deck.
Right. But you could still splash for it. Like, it would still be good or whatever.
If your fixing's fine, or maybe that's where you end up, right?
Yeah,
so then it leads to some interest. It could lead to some really unique character combinations. Like, you could even make some, like, busted strange synergies where if you had, like, you know, Jaime Lannister as the Lord High Commander of the Night's Watch or something, like, what does that turn into? You know?
I dig it, yeah.
Could be sweet. That's neat, Jared. Yeah. Good. I like that. That's
that was wild. That was a good suggestion.
Hooray!
I had my simple one, which was like morale, what did I call it? Morale infusion or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like just a white aura. And you would play it on your creature, and it gets +1/+0 for each other attack creature. And it gets +1/+0 for each other blocking creature.
+0/+1.
Yeah, right. So it like gets bigger in the butt for when it defends with friends, and it gets bigger in the front when it attacks.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that one too. Again, it is very enchantment-y. But it's like very low fantasy, so it just fits right in, right? Like if you have bros, then you're like doing great. You're like you're untouchable. You're running into battle. You're stabbing people in the eye and shit. But if you're by yourself, like you're just you.
Yep.
So yeah, I like that too. I like that too.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's good. Good homework.
Hey.
Good homework.
So. MTGO made some changes.
What?
We are probably going to wait to try to talk about those maybe next week.
Yes. Yeah, we're hoping to get some more information on it.
Yeah, you want to see kind of how it fleshes out, too.
Well, and more importantly, we've submitted a request for an interview with Lee Sharp from Wizards.
Now you just go and tell them everything like that.
Yeah,
just
well,
like,
hey,
just like,
you know what? We've requested. Yeah. I've requested the interview with Wizards. So we'll see if it comes through in time. We're hoping that we should be able to get them on before next week. If it's next week, it's next week. But we'll save our thoughts on this to try to... There's been a lot of talk. It just came out today. So we'll kind of let some things settle out. I know there's already been a bunch of math that's been crunched, and we'll see. But we'd like to try to get in front of it. But we want to let you know that we wanted to get in front of it correctly instead of just flying off the handle. Like, there are a lot of people that think this is the end of the world. You know, I think that for some people it's bad news, and I think that for everyone else it's fine, but maybe I'm strange. So it's going to be interesting to kind of collect more of that, get it in front of Lee, and see if we can get him in front of all of you, and see what he has to say. So let's cross our fingers and hope. The other item that has come up. So for those of you with smartphones, we got I got an app pointed to me today, which is MTGO Calendar. It's okay. An Android only app. Okay.
Meek.
This is fantastic for me. I open up the application, and it basically tells me the Magic Online event schedule.
Oh, neat.
From like downtime that. To downtime. So, if you're ever on the fly, and it, like, automatically converts it into my local time zone. So, you always go to the Magic web, the MTGO website, right? And it's always in Pacific. So, if you're not on Pacific time, you've got to adjust it manually on wherever you're at.
Yeah.
So this app does all of that for you, and all you have to do is open it up, and it tells you when your events are. Super simple, totally free. I think it's awesome. I've been using it a lot, and it makes me happy. Especially when things like pre-TQs go up, or, you know, like special events, like it's going to be updated with every downtime from downtime to downtime. So check that out if that's something you guys are in the market for. And one more. That came into our inbox, actually, was...
A shit story?
No. One of the listeners actually makes apps for Android.
Oh.
And one of them is the Ultimate MTG Life Counter. Okay?
How ultimate?
Well...
Yeah, because there's a lot of Life Counter apps.
There are a lot of Life Counter apps out there. And this one looks like it's like simple, pretty clean. Like, there's a lot of different screens that are useful. You can use it sort of like for yourself. You know, you can use it large, is a large screen sort of item. If you're doing some streaming at your store and you want a way to accurately represent life totals on the table, like that sort of stuff, it's got some options there. But what's really exciting is there's Chromecast support for it coming soon. So if you're thinking about it from like a feature match perspective in your store and you want a way to, you know, you can show it on screen, you can mirror it on a larger screen for people watching, like that's a pretty neat little feature. So, and you can track up to 16 players on tablets with it too. So if you are having like a big grand melee on a, you know, booze cube table or whatever, you can track everyone's life total that way. But it looks like it's pretty sweet, clean. I haven't tried it myself yet, but I mean, hey, you know what? If it's made by a listener, we gotta support it. So you guys go check that out too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's got some really good reviews. It looks really tight. It looks clean from a UI standpoint. And all the reviews basically say it's smooth like butter. So that's awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah. So if you're not into, like, sign in blood, life pads, and paper, then...
Which you should be.
That's probably a good way to do it. I mean, it depends on how pro you are. Right? How pro are you?
Yeah, how pro are you?
So.
Also... Having things on devices at RL, not really kosher.
Oh yeah, I totally forgot all about that.
Yeah, so paper and pen still really good if you're going to a tournament.
So that.
Yeah. But speaking of tournaments and all that kind of stuff and, you know, getting in trouble and judgy type stuff like that, big shout out to our editor, the fifth member of the A-Team, the silent man who makes us sound so good. Kyle at getting his L1 this weekend, so.
Oh, yeah. A dark side joiner.
Yeah. The four-leaf clover's number one threat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Fuck, yeah. It's like he's making four-leaf clovers.
Yeah. Like, once a week he posts on, like, Facebook, like, oh, found another one. And I just, like, I love it because it's like, oh, well, these things are rare because we systematically seek and destroy them.
Yeah.
And like our hero, our knight is Kyle. Like he is a one man four leaf clover genocide. And yeah,
he obviously this is the reason that they are so rare is that he's his secret job.
Yeah, like if people had superpowers, Kyle would be finding four leaf clovers and making podcasts sound so sweet.
Nice.
So awesome for you, Kyle. Way to kick ass.
Well, there are a number of events happening in and around the area. There's a pre-TQ at Legends Warehouse this weekend on Saturday. There's the MDSS, of course, put on by our fine friends at face2facegames.com. I will be there slinging some modern cards, so feel free to come on by and say hi. Madrin. Sunday, I think at 401 Games, there is a pre-TQ modern as well, so lots of that happening in the Toronto area. I know that there, the MDSS is also in Ottawa for Standard, I think, this weekend. And there is a pre-TQ out there for Modern as well on Sunday. So there are plenty of places to play cards this weekend if you are all inclined to do so. So
yeah, well, if you're going to do that, I'm going to do Alberta shoutouts really quick for PTPQs. In Calgary, Sentry Box has a sealed PPTQ on the 25th, so Saturday.
And it's at Origins?
It's Origins. In the 25th, also on the same day in Edmonton at the Adventurers Guild, it's a sealed PPTQ. Yeah. And on Sunday, Wizards Sherwood Park, so that's just outside of Edmonton in the burbs, has a modern PPTQ. And that one's a 32-player cap, so if you're going to get in on that, you got to get in on that quick.
I like capping those is really interesting for me.
I was going to say,
it's
like,
just space. That's what it comes down to. I think it's completely fair if it's space. Like that's something you have to accept.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you actually have the ability to cap them, because when they first announced this program, and you know, if we aren't keeping track, I think that the PPTQ system is garbage. I think it's hot garbage. But to keep on to it, one of the things I was really concerned about at first was that this was going to be a premier tournament that you had to have like infinite like space in order to have them. And I'm very happy that you don't. So, yeah. So I'm okay with caps. I've been on the wrong side of them, which, you know, sucks, but I'm just glad that we have the ability to have tournaments and that all the shops can have them and they don't have to bend over backwards to host them. It's already hard enough for them to find their L2s and all this kind of stuff.
Nice. All right. Well, with that said, everybody, I guess it's time for us to call it an evening. We will thank you very much, everybody, for joining us. Hopefully you will tune in next week where we will have all sorts of amazing stuff. And we will all have stories about amazing Magic that we will have played. Hopefully KYT will have some testing stories and we will find out what's going on. So if you are on either Team Hain or Team Maynard, you can watch that all shake out this weekend as Pascal is in Dallas. So we are hoping for some interesting things and we'll see how it all shakes up. So with that, have a great, great week. We'll see you soon.
Love you all.
Bye.
All right, good. Episode, what are we into?
So this one?
Episode 238. Not it.
Not it.
Jer.
What? I was doing the chapeau thing.
Sweet. You get the introduction.
Oh, my. All right.